So we can read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 13. Can you get that up? Yeah, please go ahead. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 4, text 13. Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Chaturvarnam maya srishtam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam. Vidhya kartaram. You can see the Sanskrit there? Pull it down a bit so that all the Sanskrit. You read Nagari script?
Vidhya
kartaram.
Vidhya
kartaram avyayam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Vidhya kartaram. Vidhya kartaram avyayam.
Chaturvarnyam.
Chaturvanyam maya srishtam.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Guna karma vibhagashaha.
Tasya kartaram api mam.
Vidya kartaram avyayam. Translation, according to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Purport, the Lord is the creator of everything. Everything is born of Him. Everything is sustained by Him. And everything after annihilation rests in Him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called Brahmanas due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the Kshatriyas due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And the Shudras, or laborer class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions because he is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate men from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the brahmanas. Although brahmanas by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation of Lord Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a brahmana and reaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different plenary expansions of Krishna, namely Rama, Nrsimha, Varaha, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to the system of the four divisions of human society, a person in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nations, or species. I'm just making a little note here. Creation involves change. Right? What we call creation involves change. We created a company. It means there was no company and company was made. Or there was nothing and then there was a big bang. So there was change from nothing to something. So creation involves change. But Krishna says he is unchangeable. So this is very significant, apart from the social discussion here. This is very significant philosophically also, in as much as the Mayavadis, or the Advaitavadis, to be more general. Because Brahman is unchangeable, that's accepted in Shastra, they say that this Brahman is one. Vedanta teaches that Brahman is one and Brahman is unchangeable. But this world has come into being due to change, and this world, everything is always changing. Gacchatiti jagat. That which always moves is called jagat. So movement means change. So if Brahman is only one, and Brahman is not changing, unchangeable, and we see this world, everything in it is always moving. Even the modern scientists say everything is always moving. There's nothing which is still. At the subatomic level, there is no. In one sense, there's nothing solid. It's all just energy. So everything's changing. So that means that this world, if we're to follow the Vedic conclusion, doesn't exist. It can't be, because it doesn't fit the description of Shastra. Therefore, it's all an illusion. But Krishna says here, he's the creator of this system, but he is unchanging. And he is Param Brahma. He is the Supreme Brahma, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we find in his discussion with Prakashananda Saraswati at Varanasi, he upheld, in opposition to Shankaracharya's Kevaladvaitavada, there's only oneness. He said, he gave the Shakti Parinamavad, that Brahman is unchanging, but the energy of Brahman changes. It's subject to transformation. And the Shakti of Brahma, Shakti, Shakti Matara Bheda. The Shakti, the energy and the energetic are non-different. But the energy is subject to transformation, not Brahman himself. And therefore, that brings in the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The Brahman is unchanging. The energy of Brahman, the external energy, is subject to, or by very nature, is full of change. And so it's different from Brahman and not different also. So that's a philosophical aside. Something else. I just want to make some other note here. Kshatriyas, Srila Prabhupada writes, due to their being in the mode of passion, and also he writes, Srila Prabhupada writes, a section of whom form. See, every time we read this, find there's more and more in Srila Prabhupada's writings. So, just some little notes. I want to get back to that for myself later. Now, when we read this, we think, well, what do we think? It's those who are regular readers of Srila Prabhupada's books know that it's talking about Varnashram, but this must be the most widely distributed of all of Srila Prabhupada's books, I would think, Bhagavad Gita, as it is. Definitely in India, which for the last many years has been... ISKCON in India has been distributing more books probably than the rest of the world put together. Or somewhat like... And Bhagavad Gita is always the top book for distribution. A lot of our distribution in India is done by it's very different to the West, where mostly in the West it's you go out, put a book in people's hands. Is that what you do in Sweden also? You don't ask them to choose, because if they choose, they'll all become shunyavadis. They'll all take which book do you want to take? Zero. None of them. You have to push it in. You have to and sell it. So there's selling also in India, but a lot of it is we put a book table, people come, talk to them. But definitely some pushing is there also. But people are most inclined to take Bhagavad Gita as it is. Even we've done so many in Maharashtra and in the Telugu speaking area especially. These two areas, people say, well, we go back to the same places, and people like it's always popular. Generation after year, people want this book. They like Bhagavad Gita as it is. In fact, about a year or so ago, a special edition was printed. We all gold embossed and very fancy for Mukesh Ambani and his wife. And if you know about India, you've probably heard of them. They're prominent business people, some of the richest people in the world, even though they're mostly in India. Reliance. So they chartered, what's the word for that? They commissioned an edition to be made to give to their friends. And one of our devotees asked, well, why did you choose this edition of Bhagavad Gita? And Mrs. Mukesh, whose name I don't know, maybe some of you know. What's her name?
Anita.
Well, there's a difference of opinion over this, but it doesn't really matter to the topic of our discussion. It's interesting, in India you get names, they can be completely opposite. Someone can be called Dhira, someone else can be called Adhira, Nitam, Anitam, like this. That's Beda Beda Tattva. So she was the one, it seems, behind it, and she replied, "Well, when you think of Bhagavad Gita, you think of the ISKCON edition." So you can see how deeply it's gone into the culture, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Even though there are so many editions. Previously, a generation ago in North India, when people thought of Bhagavad Gita, they'd think of the Gita Press Gorakhpur edition. But now it seems it's the, what she calls the ISKCON edition, although technically it's the BBT edition. So some have been distributed. Now ISKCON's distributed 500 million books, and worldwide since late 1960s. Book distribution really began in the early 1970s. What's going on there? Yeah? And Bhagavad Gita is the most distributed book. Vijay Prabhu, who's ISKCON's world minister of book distribution, he notes that Bhagavad Gita seems to make devotees in the Western world more than any other book. He often asks people, how did you come to Krishna consciousness? Was it through a book? And it seems that Bhagavad Gita has that effect, which might be somewhat unexpected, because even to look at it, for someone who's not familiar with all of this, it looks a bit forbidding with all this Sanskrit and Sanskrit script. And then the Sanskrit script is translated into or written in Roman script, or what we might call English script. And if you look at that, and it's got all these lines and dots, and it doesn't look like it's going to be an easy read. I remember we, many years ago, distributing Sri Yishopanishad in Ireland. And particularly one day a year, there's the Farmer's Day. And farmers come from all over Ireland. I don't know if they still do. They used to Dublin for some big meeting or whatever. And we were selling them. And many from the far west coast of Ireland, where Irish language, Gaelic language, is still spoken. Many people would look at the Sanskrit and say, is this Irish? It's actually, so I'm told, quite similar language. Anyway, what was the point of all this? So it looks like a very difficult book. And if we read it, the Lord is creator of everything. Okay, well, the average Christian could agree with that. Everything is born of him, everything is sustained by him, and everything after annihilation rests in him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order. And immediately people are lost. What the average reader has not got a clue what the four divisions of the social order are, or even what's being referred to by the social order. So it can be quite difficult to understand, but still people become devotees by reading it. I myself, the first book of Srila Prabhupada's that I read was Krishna Book, Volume 2, and I read through it, and afterwards I thought, I didn't understand much, but seems there's something there, solid and substantial. So I visited Bhaktivedanta Manor, which meant taking a journey from Ireland. In those days, hardly anyone flew. It was overland by ferry. And I went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and the rest is history, as they say. So the point I'm getting to here is that it's difficult to understand, but some of the things may be not only difficult to understand, but may be actually seen as offensive by readers. When we talk about the four divisions of the social order, hierarchical society, that there are divisions of the intelligent class, the administrative class, the mercantile class, and the laborer class. The shudras or laborer class are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. Are you saying laborers are ignorant? The Labour Party won't like that, that's for sure. Labour Party in England. You may know, most of you are from England or been here long enough to know what the Labour Party is. It's supposed to represent the workers. But even anyone now, they think that's very offensive to say that. And actually, throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, there are all kinds of statements which might appear to be just outrageous. Here, let's get to the... where is that? Early in the first... Where does that come? Let me go to the first chapter. Where does that come? First canto, Senior Obiyomadhe. Maybe I've gone too far. I think it comes earlier than that. Anyway, there's a statement. Should know the books, Prabhupada said, as the lawyer knows his books. I take that to mean you may not know every word of it, but you know where to find what you want to find. Nowadays we're all lazy. We generally look in the Veda base to find out. Let's go on a little bit more. Kshatriya. Srila Prabhupada's purport to chapter 1, text 40. Good population. Let's read the. Adharma bhavat Krishna pradushyanti kula striyaha strishu dushtasu varshneya jayate varna sankaraha. When irreligion is prominent in the family, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. Women become polluted. The degradation of womanhood. What do you think? How would that go down, generally? Even to say the very concept that women can become polluted and degraded. How can you say that? And from them come unwanted progeny. Common English word that used to be there, it's a swear word, bastard, which means the son of an unmarried mother. But nowadays that's very, very common. And even the government gives support. So they promote it in that sense. So it's... This is what is nowadays called not politically correct. Purport. Good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. Good population. Who's to say what's good? Who are you to say what's good? Good population in... It actually makes sense if you just are not crazy. Good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. Isn't that good population? If people are not interested in spiritual progress, they may be interested in peace and prosperity. Good population means those who are willing to work hard and in a regulated manner. So continuing, the Varnashram religion's principles were so designed that the good population would prevail in society for the general progress, general spiritual progress of state and community. Such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. This is not going to be very popular. Let's go on. It's getting more and more unpopular. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. According to Chanakya Pandit, women are generally not very intelligent and therefore not very trustworthy. So the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to a good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. On the failure of such Varnashram dharma, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is indulged in at the risk of unwanted population. Irresponsible men also provoke adultery in society, and thus unwanted children flood the human race at the risk of war and pestilence. So that links, this links with the verse that I started this talk with, Chato Varnam Maya Srishtam, the talk of the Varnashram system. So going back to Arjuna's worries about how society would, he was afraid that if all the Kshatriyas who protect society are killed, then demoniac men would take advantage of the unprotected women. And the combination of low-class men with unprotected women would produce unwanted progeny. Now, these ideas, we can say at least, are very, very different to what are commonly considered to be proper at the present time. And people can get very upset, as we just saw, if we discuss these things, even if we try to discuss them in a reasonable way, as we saw in Brno just the other day, where one visitor after class challenged me about why are the women in the back and the men in the front, and I just started to explain. And I don't think anyone could say it was in any way a fanatical way, or I just said that the men and women are equal, but there are different social roles, and he became very upset and just walked out. And you went to see that he wasn't going to smash anything on the way out. And he said, "I'm disgusted." It's very difficult to preach all these things. We're distributing these books, but in the Western world at the present time, it seems to be very difficult to... This idea of hierarchical, structured society, Marxist concepts have very deeply entered Western society. And in India also, modern Indians, they're probably the greatest opponents of re-establishing Varnashram, because they say, caste system, very bad. And actually the caste system in many ways is very bad. But then, of course, Srila Prabhupada wasn't presenting the caste system that is inflexible by birth, and the upper castes oppress the lower castes. So this idea, that is not a good idea, but that's not what we're presenting. Also very prominent in India at the present time is, and it's very strongly being promoted, even by the political party and its affiliated social organizations that are at present in power, the Bharatiya Janata Party, along with the RSS and the VHP and the Bajrang Dal and whatever else is, Bharatiya Vidyarthi Party, what is that? BVP? What is that?
Bharatiya
Akhil Bharatiya Vidyarthi Parishad, and so on. They're all, although they're supposed to be promoting what they call Hindutva, they're all against casteism, which is okay, but they don't know the difference between the casteism that is so much maligned all over the world and Krishna's creation, Varnashram. So in one sense, they're atheistic if they oppose Varnashram, because this is created by Krishna. In the name of establishing Hindutva, they have their own idea of what the teacher... they want to adjust it to the modern age. Recently, in Maharashtra, the chief minister, who's also a BJP man with a Persian name, so sounds like a Muslim. What's his name? Fadnavis, is it?
Beautiful.
And so, he pushed through this thing that was being agitated for, that women should be able to enter the Shanidev temple. And previously they hadn't been allowed to. The idea was that it would be bad luck for them. Shani is really tough to deal with, isn't it? Anyone who knows anything about, even slightly about astrology, knows that, like me, I only know very slightly. But if you know anything slightly, you know Shani's tough character. You better be careful in dealing with him. So the idea is that it's going to be inauspicious for them. But anyways, pushed through, and this, what's his name? Devendra. Devendra, is it?
Yeah.
Fadnavis. He said that that outdated rules, they should be thrown out. Well, who is he to decide what's outdated? What's his qualification? That's what I thought when I read that. So he's subscribing to the idea that that previously we had all these rules, but now we're more advanced and society is different and we should just change and just keep what we want. This is another atheistic idea. We should be based on Shastra. Ya Shastra Vidimutsraja Vartate Kama Karataha Nasa Siddhim Abhagnati Nasukam Naparam Gatim. Those who discard scriptural injunctions and act according to their own whims can never attain Nasa Siddhim Abhagnati. They can never attain perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. Srila Prabhupada, in pursuance of Krishna's statements, wanted to re-establish pristine Varnashram as far as is possible in Kali Yuga. Because that is the system created by Krishna. It's not spiritual in and of itself. It's a social division. But it's the one given by Krishna Oh, there's another point. Yeah, we can link this 4.13 with Purusha Sukta. It's the system given by Krishna. So it's the best system for managing an imperfect world and imperfect people, because it gives a structure whereby people can work according to their presently acquired level of illusion in a manner that they can gradually become purified. And particularly, Krishna offers the idea toward the end of... Well, he's offered it throughout the Bhagavad Gita, but he makes it explicit toward the end of Bhagavad Gita to the aspiring yogi, Arjuna. Arjuna wanted to leave the battle, but Krishna told him, you don't have to leave the battle. And ultimately, at the end, Swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhing vindati manavaha. that every person, by following the Varnashram system and working according to their particular situation, and simultaneously worshipping Krishna, they can attain all perfection. So this system is given by Krishna. Srila Prabhupada came to teach the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the spreading the holy names, the joy of devotion, all these matters. But he also came, one of his points, which is not the essence of what he came to give, but very important to support the essence, is to reestablish Varnashram. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when asked about Varnashram, said, Eho Bhahya. It is, when it was proposed to him that one should worship Vishnu via Varnashram, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that's external. Well, that's true, Varnashram is external. It's not the essence. It's not directly to do with the soul. But again, it deals with or manages our external situation, the external situation of society, in a manner that is favorable for coming to the point of Krishna consciousness. If we get stuck up on varnas and ashrams without coming to the point, then if we simply follow that, Chari Varnashram Ejodi Krishna Nahi Bhaje. Swakarma Korite Rorave Parimaje. If one follows the Varnashram system without worshipping Krishna, even though you do your work very nicely, you fall into hell, says Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, echoing Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Varnashram system is not of the essence, but practically it is also, inasmuch as we require that. To maintain society in a manner that is suitable for bringing everyone to Krishna consciousness, and of course Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to bring the whole world to Krishna consciousness. Now it is a lot easier to tell people about the joy of devotion than to talk about Varnashram, because people are interested in happiness. So if we tell them chant Hare Krishna and be happy, they like the be happy bit. So if chanting Hare Krishna makes you happy, okay, give it a try. We tried so many other things, let's try chanting Hare Krishna also. So it's relatively easy to preach like that. If we tell them that happiness in Krishna consciousness requires abnegation of all endeavors to be happy on the material platform, they may not be so happy. We can call people for kirtan, they may like that. We call them for prasadam, they may like that. We find often people are attracted to kirtan and prasadam. But if we tell them no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication, they may not be very happy to hear that. But that's also required to discuss that. We may think that, well, okay, let's tell people to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But we see that Srila Prabhupada did discuss all these other points also. It's described in that Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, how Srila Prabhupada preaching among the hippies, among whom what do they call that? Free love? Free love, what is the word? I can't remember. But their idea was that, you know, just love. And just love each other. Put flowers in your hair. If you go to San Francisco, be sure to wear a flower in your hair and all this kind of thing. With the idea, let's just be happy and all mix up and have sex. But Srila Prabhupada taught them that no illicit sex, Okay, bell's rung enough now. No illicit sex, not a very popular sales point. If Prabhupada, he wanted to make Krishna conscious, he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness. You may say, well, why did he insist on that? Because there is no Krishna consciousness without this. Okay, all right. But then, what about preaching about Varnashram? That doesn't seem to, that's not going to be a good seller. It's not even the essence of Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada preached openly about that also. When he went to Sweden, one time Srila Prabhupada visited Sweden, which is outside of, at that time, the Warsaw Pact countries, the most socialistic country. Nowadays, it probably is, now that the whole CIS, what is it, the USSR, and it's that the communism has collapsed there. So Sweden is the most socialistic country, with the idea very strongly in the people's mind. Everyone's equal, it's all the same, no discrimination, no hierarchy. I remember selling these silly records in Sweden in, must have been late 1979, raising funds to purchase vehicles for preaching in Bangladesh. So I remember stopping a woman on the street and asking her, do you want to buy this record? She turned to her little boy, who was about 5 years old, and said, shall we buy it? And she has to take the opinion of the five-year-old boy. So Srila Prabhupada in Sweden at Uppsala University, highly prestigious, is it? That's like the Cambridge or Oxford of Sweden, is it?
Yeah.
It's... So Srila Prabhupada spoke about how preaching to the faculty and the students, Srila Prabhupada spoke about how a society should be divided into first-class men, second-class men, third-class men, and fourth-class men. Practically, he couldn't have spoken about anything that would have been less popular. They didn't like it because they had preconceptions of how we're all supposed to be the same. We're all supposed to be equal. Oh, it's already 6:05. I didn't even start what I wanted to talk about. I'm just coming round to it. And at the end, one man indignantly, and to get a Swede indignant, you have to really poke them because they pride themselves on being very calm, is it? Emotionless, blocks of ice. Sorry to insult the Swedes, but someone should do it. Apart from the Norwegians and the Danes and the Finns. Sorry, shouldn't make racial jokes in classes. You're talking about first class men. So you think you're a first class man? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, I am the lowest class, because I'm the servant of everyone. And it wasn't that Prabhupada was giving a riposte, as in fencing. It wasn't that he had it all worked out, and it just came naturally, automatically to Srila Prabhupada to think himself the lowest of all. But the point I'm making here is he didn't shy away from making such a presentation. Similarly, I was recently told by my godbrother Guru Gauranga Prabhu, who I met recently in Switzerland, that when Srila Prabhupada, he came to Geneva, and Srila Prabhupada knew that Geneva was, even though a small city, it's important because the United Nations, UNESCO headquarters are there, and at the time it was more important, I think, United Nations in the world than it is now. People used to take it more seriously than they do now. And Srila Prabhupada met the mayor of Geneva, that was arranged by Guru Gauranga Prabhu. And Srila Prabhupada spoke to him about the Varnashram system. about how society should be organized like this. He wanted to impress upon the leaders of society the importance of organizing society in this way. And afterwards, Guru Granth Prabhu told me afterwards, later when he met Srila Prabhupada in India, and Srila Prabhupada remembered him, he was very grateful that Prabhupada remembered him, he actually called for Guru Gauranga Prabhu and asked him, so did the mayor of Geneva, how did he receive that? I spoke to him about that. So this made an impression on Guru Gauranga Prabhu that Srila Prabhupada had not only actually spoken about that, but he was interested to know how this important person had received that message. In other words, he was very interested to communicate this to the leaders of society. Now, why am I bringing this all up? To be frank, as ISKCON celebrates 50 years, we have largely neglected Srila Prabhupada's orders to institute Varnashram. There may be various reasons for that. One reason I can imagine is that it's not likely to be well received. If we tell people, everyone chant Hare Krishna, then at least some of people may do so. If we give them prasadam, that's always popular. If we do, you're speaking to me about yoga classes, people come for yoga. Okay, yoga, great. If we speak about organizing human society according to what, if people can at all understand what we're talking about, they'll think it's some archaic Indian system of governance that has, what's the relevance to modern society? It seems like it's not a good sell. It's not a good selling point. And included in... apart from the difficulty to understand it, it appears to go against what is considered sacred. Although it's a bit difficult to say. It's sacred in the secular society. Secular society means they don't hold anything sacred, but as sacred as they could. The idea that all men are equal, all humans, not men, all men and women. I'm going through a commentary on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali by Edwin Bryant, who was initiated in ISKCON many years ago. And I'm particularly going through that because I'm interested in studying Bhagavad Gita, and it's a book about yoga. And it's not about yoga, it's not about doing physical exercises. It's comprehensive. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, bhakti yoga. There are various yogas mentioned in Gita and elsewhere. I'm finding that commentary very useful for that purpose that he's given. But one point I note is that he always talks about the yogi when he or she, but yogis... The yogis in the Patanjali system were always he's, not she's. So, but I suppose the author thought, well, just to, let's avoid all this controversy and just say he and she. Of course, the term yogini is there, but that, as far as I know, that would mostly be in Tantra. Left-wing tantra. The practice of yoga, Patanjali yoga, especially that the yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, Pratyahara, after pranayama. Yeah. So that Ashtanga yoga, that was to be done by men, not by women. So this whole idea, the idea of the role of women, and that there's a laborer class of men who are considered to be in the mode of ignorance, and even beyond the Shudras, who are pretty much not considered very highly, there are others also who live outside the cities and the villages in their own areas, and they're outside the Varnashram system. They're not even considered practically even humans, because they freely eat meat and take alcohol and mix for sex, and they're not even considered civilized at all. But that describes largely the civilized man of the modern age, uncivilized. So it's very difficult to promote this, and it would seem that it's almost an obstacle in our spreading Krishna consciousness to promote this. It seems that many of our devotees feel like that, and that's a reason why deliberately Varnashram hasn't been promoted. It's thought that we don't understand it, we can't get others to understand it, so let's just leave it and promote Harinam, and maybe sometime in the future we can get round to this. But the problem is that Srila Prabhupada told us to institute this even now. Immediately, he said, in 1974, I believe it was, we should immediately have Varnashram colleges at all our centers. And he was promoting very much these farm communities. Not that Varnashram is only for farms, but Varnashram society, like all societies before the Industrial Revolution, were agrarian based. And even actually, industrial societies are also, because you have to eat. But by agrarian based means the majority of people in society lived on the land and lived on the land or in small villages. Even towns weren't very big, and a lot of the population was engaged directly and indirectly in agriculture, as you can see there, or in simple professions. Even if we find the many English names up to the present day, there's farmer, obviously. It's not so. Anyway, it's an English surname, gardener. But apart from that, there are names. Shepherd is a common name. So these are all names connected with agriculture. Butcher, that also, because killing the animals there also. Butcher, and then we have skinner. Skinning the animals, tanner, tanning the skins, shearer, means shearing the sheep, thatcher is also making houses and putting the thatch roof, the traditional system. And the thatch is the taken from the crops, the straw. Mason means a skilled artisan mostly in building the buildings. Farrier, that's not such a common name, but that was also essential for the horses, means whom puts the horseshoes. Tailor, yeah, these were home or village crafts. Tailor is a very common name in England, and there are probably many more if we think about them. So many of the surnames in England, they refer, and of course Smith, Carter, these are very common names. They refer to village craftsmen. Not the Carter, but the Smith. Wright is a village craftsman, particularly concerned with the carts of the carter. So we can see that that was that simple village potter. There's another one, potter. These are all, and of course there'd be others like cook, butler, baker. These are names of professions, and many others also, priest, parson. They're not exactly village based, but they're religious based. There are many like that, priest, parson, abbot. These are English surnames. So they're professions in the traditional society.
Farmer,
yeah, I said that at the beginning, yeah. If we think about it, probably there are many more.
Elliot,
I don't know what that means, but it's not obviously concerned with a profession. Fisher, yeah. Fisher, a lot of, probably originally the fishers were mostly inland fishers. The dangerous seas off England. So it was an agriculture-based society, and it had, so Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce that. But it's difficult to, for people to even recognize that there's a need for that. Or even if they think that, yeah, let's live more simply, but the idea of hierarchically based society, it's really a tough one to push. But if you think, as Srila Prabhupada presented very reasonably, that there are people are different. The idea that everyone should be treated the same, it's not a very good means of organizing society. Even in industrial society, why should everyone go to school for, how do they have to go for a minimum of 10 years, I believe, approximately, in all the industrialized nations? But then most of them end up being, now we're in post-industrial society, all the industries out in China mostly. So in the Western world, people are sitting on computers, many of them, what they do, so maybe they need some kind of education. But it can't last, this society, because it's based on, the Western world is still wealthy, basically by manipulating finances. The countries that produce should be the ones that are wealthy. But China gave all its money to America and the Western country. It's all on loans, it's all very complex. It's a pack of cards that can collapse at any time. Economic structure of the world is very, very flimsy. But anyway, considering that most of the people of the world are going to be, even in industrial society, factory workers, taxi drivers, you don't require to go to 10 years to school to drive a taxi. In fact, you don't need to go to school even for 10 days. You could learn it from your father, if you have a father. It can be taught very simply and quickly. Of course, you need to know to read is helpful. So you can read the street signs and the numbers, 50, that means don't go faster than 50. And then you look on your car and it says 52. I'm going too fast, but anyway, they won't catch me unless I go above 55, so it's okay. Mm-hmm. And probably 60 is okay also, but you never know.
10%.
Is it a 10% rule?
10% error.
10% they allow, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't need all this. Prabhupada made this point, you don't need all this education. Why does everyone have to have such a big education if most of them are going to end up just doing something which doesn't require such a big education, and even most of the education that people get is useless for what they're going to do in future. If you can remember what you studied at school, if at all you can remember it, you'll know that it has very little relevance to what you're doing now. So Srila Prabhupada made this point, you're wasting you're spoiling the lives of the children by sending them to school. But it's thought around the other way. If you don't send them to school, you're mistreating, it's worse, child abuse, not to send children to school. You have to send them to school so they can get ahead in life. They can have an opportunity. But the opportunities are all defined by the economic system, which makes you a part of the... You don't have any opportunity to define the system. You just have to fit into it. They talk about freedom, but you have the freedom to, it's limited by the opportunities that the society itself presents. So Srila Prabhupada had very revolutionary ideas, and they are difficult to even our own devotees, in many cases, for many devotees to understand. Now, I think maybe we put the arti a little later. How about that?
Yeah, that's fine.
There's no daily arti
here.
Yeah,
we can push it.
So establishing this Varnashram is a major order of Srila Prabhupada, and as his followers, we have to take that very seriously and try to do that. Some of the important injunctions, generally unwelcome injunctions concern the role of women. And it's not very difficult to understand when Srila Prabhupada says that there are different kinds of people, so they should be organized as such and treated differently. The intelligent class — by intelligent we don't mean only the people who have what they would call the IQ, but persons who are philosophically interested to understand the purpose of life. People are interested in purification of consciousness. They should be brahmanas. They should be designated as such and treated as such and given special position, that they don't have to work for a living. They should be supported by everyone else. But at the same time, they should be ready to live very simply. Not that they live very — they deliberately live very simply so that they can minimize their material needs, so that they can absorb themselves in study, so that they can give back to their knowledge to human society and guidance. And then there are people who are natural leaders. It seems less and less so in the modern age, with the TV and everything just makes everyone stupid. The internet, dumbing down of society. So we see less and less enterprising people, or people who can take charge, because everyone's trained just to be a pawn in the — a cog in the big industrial or economic machine. But there are people who have natural leadership qualities that should be specifically encouraged. People who can organize the production of food. That's the first — Vaishya, we think of business, but their first business is Krishi, Goraksha, and Krishi means agriculture. Goraksha means cow protection. And number three is given Vanija, business. So Vaishyas, they're meant for these activities. And people — there are other people who are happy working for others. If you try to make them the boss of a company or try to make them into an intellectual, they can't do it, and they feel uncomfortable. They make a mess for everyone else. They're well situated doing some menial work, or maybe as an artisan like this. Also dance, drama, all these things that comes under the Shudra category. So Srila Prabhupada says it's a scientific division. Different people have different propensities and different abilities. So that's understandable. Then the role of women, it's understandable, but people don't understand it. It's difficult for them to. Then the role of women, by nature, dictates that in the normal course of events, they become mothers, and they have to look after the children. That should be a full-time job. In the modern age, it need not be, because with artificial contraception, you don't have to have many children. They're a headache. You can send them off to the kindergarten and go to work. But then the role of mothers is has been vilified by feminism and said it's just stupid being a mother. Whereas it's the most important thing that they can, it's practically what they should do, because child is the father of man. For as Srila Prabhupada states in this purport to this chapter 4, text 13, that women are required for good progeny to raise, that women are the first guru inasmuch as they teach their children the basic activities of human life and human values, family values. But these points, although they're not difficult to understand, the situation has been created in human society that becomes very inflammatory even to try to discuss them, as we discovered in Brno the other day, and as I discovered in America last year, where in a program in a student town, in the questions and answers session, I gave the example of how a devotee, he's fully devoted and faithful to Krishna, just like a wife to the husband, and that was not at all appreciated. The example was not appreciated, that a wife should be faithful and devoted to her husband. It didn't fit at all. It really was not taken well at all. The example didn't go down because the concept that a woman could be devoted to her husband is considered something outdated at best, and wrong. To even think like this is inherently wrong, bad, evil, exploitive. But it becomes difficult. Then why should we try and introduce all these things? Because it is required to make a sane society. These concepts of egalitarianism and feminism, they're actually derived from an atheistic outlook. We don't want to accept Krishna's Vedic culture. So I'm trying to promote all these things. I'm not the only one in ISKCON, but I am trying to do so among my disciples and whoever else may wish to follow this. But it's not easy, and especially within our society at the present time, it's become more difficult because within our society, I'm talking about ISKCON society, the ISKCON society as a pragmatic measure has accepted some of the principles of feminism. Pragmatic means, just like this man came in the temple in Brno, which is a city in Czech Republic, which was my, I was there last week, over Janmashtami. One man came in and was immediately annoyed. Of course, it seems that he came looking for faults also, because he got life comes from life, and he didn't like that to start off with, because it's a heavy attack on science, what we nowadays call scientism. So he came looking for faults, and he saw the men and the women sit separately. The women are at the back. I don't know if you said to do that. In many temples, it's side by side, but the room is it's so narrow, it's considerably narrower than this one. So it would be too much jostling. And they sit at the back. And they seem to be happy with that. At least they're joining, and they don't have to join. The men and women who are joining there are all, they're not just coming for the chapatis, as we say. They're educated. That important word in Indian English, to be educated, it's very important to be educated. So they're all, they're mostly what, college graduates or college dropouts or of that category or whatever. So by their own choice, they've come and they've accepted this way of life, understanding the principles, and they're happy to do so. So some questions came up, getting round to the point. Some questions came up from a lady disciple of mine there, that, well, how far are we going to take, if we're going to take this separation of male and female, and preserving the chastity of women, how far do we take it? Such questions come up in our Varnashram discussions that we regularly, when I say we, that means myself and devotees who are overseeing these projects in India, we come together two or three times a year and we discuss all these points. There's so many points to be discussed. It's not an easy thing to introduce this for various reasons. For many reasons, it's not easy to introduce Varnashram projects. There are various reasons. One reason, legal reasons. For instance, if we want to introduce a child or young marriage, as Srila Prabhupada recommended, it's against the law. So that's a that's an important consideration. If we want to introduce our own village administration, well, the government also already has their system, which you're supposed to follow. So that's also a consideration. Financing the whole thing. Living simply is very costly when you have to purchase the land and build buildings. And land in India is very expensive. If the whole ISKCON organization got behind it, it might be easier. But then we find it's, we may not, how far do we interact with the whole ISKCON organization, which at the present time is not very favorable to these concepts at all. So we'd rather be independent in many ways. So there are many such discussions. One point that comes up is how far do we push this separation of men and women. There's some devotees were interested in North India that we should institute that the women should have their face covered. As now, when they come in public, Hare Krishna. Now our. In North India means we have one farm community in North India, and that was started as a pilot project just outside Baroda on land, and adjacent to that was farmland which was being rented by a family, means two brothers with their wives and children, from Saurashtra. And when I came there, I used to stay with those people who were renting, because we didn't have facility. When I visited that project, I would stay there because we didn't have facility for me to stay. So I'd stay with them. And the women, the families would come out to me. I'd give them prasadam and then greet me, and the women would come. These are young, you know, 30 something years old women, so the culture is still going on. They'd come with their face covered. That culture is still going on in parts of Gujarat and Rajasthan, and maybe in some other parts, Haryana, maybe parts of UP or whatever. So the question came up then, should we institute this? I said, well, Let's take it a little carefully, because not everyone may be ready for that. So the same question came up recently in Czech Republic. One of the Matajis, who is very seriously practicing Krishna consciousness and wants to do everything rightly and in the proper way, said that, well, maybe in future then women won't go on Harinam. Because we see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan party, it's not there. If you see the descriptions, it's only men. What was the other thing she asked about? Can you remember?
Deity worship.
Deity worship, yeah, in the Western countries. I've been asked about this several times. Would you take the women off the altar? Probably the whole, most of ISKCON's deity worship would collapse if we took the women off, because many of them are holding it up. They're keeping it going by their dedication and hard work. I neither said yes nor no, and it seems she was a bit disappointed because she wants some clear direction. But in many ways, to give a clear direction, I'm a little afraid to do so, because Srila Prabhupada, he himself said, so we're told by Brahmananda Prabhu, that Prabhupada said, son, I'm experimenting. So this Varnashram, as our attempts at this, are in many ways experimenting, but we're experimenting with people's lives. So I like to take it carefully, step by step, which is why we have meetings regularly to discuss all these points. In India, where we have several projects, we discuss. And it might be, you might say, well, everyone can just ask me and I'll give my opinion. But I'd like to discuss with devotees who are living on the projects, how the devotees are accepting all these things, take it step by step. Of course, sometimes we have to take very big steps, just like moving to the land is a big step. Not having electricity is a big step. But I prefer to discuss with them and then see what's the actual realities as the devotees observe it and see how far we're ready to go. Already we're making big steps, but although the lady devotees are already accepting so many cultural changes which they've not been raised with, I'm afraid if we push too hard, they may snap altogether. It may be too much for them. We can't force any such things in it. We want to move in a certain direction, but we can't force it. Therefore, I may not say, yes, you must do this. But rather, I'd say, all right, we may move toward that, but let's see what the present situation is. We also have to consider the present situation. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram society, but practically we see that some things are very, very unpopular. We're going to have to preach about it a lot, both among the public and among our own devotees, if we're going to institute this. Because the way we've been raised and what we're aiming at is something very, very different. So it may take some time. Or maybe should we just go for a radical overall change? Well, I'm not sure. To be quite frank, I'm not sure. I'm supposed to be the guru in contact with Krishna, but how far we should take this, I would prefer to have some caution. Knowing what our aim is and where we're going, right now if we're to say that women shouldn't go on Harinam or shouldn't do deity worship, maybe in the future we'll institute. If we're going to come to the pristine standard of Varnashram that was practiced, then maybe we're going to come to that. Maybe not. Maybe we'll say, well, Prabhupada instituted this. But I would think that gradually we should move toward the pristine standard, because that is the standard, and that's what... There's a reason for this. The reason is that the whole Varnashram system is meant to regulate society, to help us to become free from material attachments, which particularly means sexual attachments. And among the four ashrams, only in one of them is sexual activity allowed, and that too under restriction. That is certainly very difficult for people to accept in the modern age, but this is a central point of Varnashram. So what we're aiming at is something very different, very unpopular, but should be done, must be done, Srila Prabhupada said. I also wouldn't... it may be also that there are, I know of cases of women who have joined our movement in the Western world. One reason is because they want that kind of situation described in the Vedic, in Vedic literature and Srila Prabhupada's books. And they don't feel comfortable, or they didn't feel comfortable when they're told, now you go on book distribution. I don't want to stay in the temple and be quiet. they may feel like that also. They may not want to be out in the front lines like that. And in fact, one phenomenon that's somewhat, well, it's enough to be noticed as a phenomenon in Britain today, and maybe in other European countries also, is that women, young women mostly, of Western stock are becoming Muslims. Because they prefer to live like that in a restrained way, rather than try to follow the role model of a liberated woman of the Western world. Where is all this discussion going to? The point is that we have to institute this. We must do it, which means it's a struggle in many ways. But at the same time, we can find that the beginnings, when we take it up, even in the beginning stages, there is some immediate result. The result is that devotees become happy. Why? Because they're following Krishna's system. If they take it up wholeheartedly, they become happy. Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to start the Varnashram revolution with farm communities. And actually we find the devotees who are prepared to accept the austerities of living on the farms become very happy. Why is that? Well, there are various reasons for that. One reason is that they actually get more time for hearing and chanting about Krishna, which makes us happy. And they're living very simply without so much stress and anxiety and the competition of modern life. So we actually see that devotees are becoming very happy by doing so. So if I'm asked about what should we do, how should we do, I may not give a clear answer immediately. Not that I'm just avoiding it, but in any such discussion, I'd prefer to meet with the various leaders, take the pulse of all the devotees, see how far we're ready to go, and then co-jointly make a decision rather than just off the top of my head say, okay, this is the way it has to be. After all, it is a Sankirtan movement. We're all coming together to glorify Krishna and to act on Srila Prabhupada's plans. One thing I'm trying to promote within my capacity, within ISKCON, and should be outside of ISKCON also, but at least at first within ISKCON, Varnashram Dharma. Another point that I've written a book about this on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. So you may think, well, that's something different. Speaking strongly means you call him all fools and rascals, and the scientists are a bunch of atheistic scientists, are a bunch of demons. So that's something, and Varnashram is something else. But actually the two must go together. Without speaking strong, without preaching strongly, we're not going to be able to establish Varnashram. Why should people live in a Varnashram society when they have their house, they have their car, they have their job or their dole or whatever, and and they're living, and what do you need all this varnashram for? Why? Because this present society is demoniac. It works against the real need of human life, which is to become Krishna conscious. It's all based on speculative theories of egalitarian theories, economic theories, not derived from Shastra. It's a hell of a society, and I'm saying that in a literal way. It's hellish society. We have to promote this. Why? What's the value of this society? People are sorry, Britain, rule Britannia, Britannia rules the way. Oops, that was 100 years ago. Anyway, there'll always be an England, maybe not a Scotland, but you know, Britain, it's great. Great Britain, Great Britain. It's a hell. It's not just the weather, but the whole concept of life. We shall be happy by being British and drinking beer and eating bacon and eggs and pinstripe suit for some and Manchester United for others and this is Britain. Jai. No, it's useless. It's this national pride, or the whole idea of factories and the whole idea of life without being God-centered, without understanding the purpose of life. This is a misuse of the human form of life. This should be promoted. Otherwise, why should people go and live in a simple way, restructure the society, radical restructure? We have to preach strongly among our devotees and among non-devotees also. Now, 50 years of ISKCON is being celebrated with the motto, the joy of devotion. Okay, but we have to make it clear that that joy, it's not just one choice. Okay, there's the joy of devotion, there's the joy of bacon and eggs, there's the joy of Manchester United, there's the joy of pinstripe suits, there's the joy of being British or French or Russian. It's all nonsense. This is the only real, this actual life is in Krishna consciousness. That has to be preached also. Otherwise, why should people take... Varnashram is not an aim in itself, but it is something that Srila Prabhupada promoted very strongly, because without that, it's difficult to be... difficult to organize society in such a way that Varna Sankara won't be promoted more and more and more. The whole world will become more and more and more hellish. So there are a few thoughts on that, and I guess we can have Arati now.